try it. If you can get away with an elevated vertical, you're much better with that than with a ground-based one, especially if you're going to kind of cut corners on radials. But, you know, it's kind of difficult. You have to kind of build these things and see how it works and come to a conclusion. That's why very often fellow amateur radio operators, you know, never really decide on an antenna. They're always thinking about the next one that they're going to try out and test. Thanks, Frank. Anyone else with any good ideas for the type of antenna system that Sam is considering for his brownstone? Yes, Paul.
How about, you know, a regular dipole? I know it's 134 feet, but, you know, you could zigzag those things all over the place to theoretically shorten it, actually shorten it. But 134 feet, you can go, you know, it's got a length of 50 feet maybe on a roof, and then you come off the roof and start heading to the backyard, you know, go up one way on an angle, put an insulator, hold it to one side and let the other end go to the other side, and wherever the middle is, connect your coax. And, you know, probably, you know, it does sound like a short piece of property, but I know you could zigzag these dipoles all over the place. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, yeah, you can zigzag it. And again, you're kind of stuck with the problem that depending upon your environment, your topology, and what have you, it may be wonderful or it may be awful. You don't know until you try it and do it. It'll probably screw up the radiation pattern. It might not be sufficient to be noticeable or you know, detrimental. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, I went the way of a fan dipole, which used a loading coil to get a shortened, mechanically shortened antenna operating at 80 meters. But, again, you have to deal with the higher Q and the more narrow bandwidth operational without an antenna tuner.
Well, Roy, you gave me a lot to think about, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate the gang coming in to give their suggestions, and I look forward to listening a little bit more this evening, and thank you very much.
You're welcome, Sam. I wish you good luck. Of course, you could use a method that I worked on as a child with my Sears catalog, my parents, my father. I got a kick out of giving me a Sears catalog around this time of the year and said you can look through it and you can pick anything that you want. I'm not going to buy it for you, but you can pick it. So, you know, you might want to look through DX Engineering specifically for 80-meter vertical antennas and take a look at the different brands. You know, they've been selling for decades, so one would hope that they work, and you could look them up at EHAM and get read reviews and look up smart guys who went into the design capabilities of each of these and, you know, figure out what the strengths and the weaknesses. You know, they all unfortunately have weaknesses, but sometimes they have enough strengths to balance that. So I would suggest, along with all the other things, that you just kind of run through DX Engineering's catalog and see if anything hits your interest.
KD2FYU.
Yes, George.
Good evening, Roy. I would like to address Sam's issue. Sam, are you looking to work 40 and 75, 80 meters maybe?
Yes, preferably yes. I am looking into that, yes.
There is a design. Hey, how you doing, Sam? There is a design that I picked up in an old ham radio book by W4JRW. Bill Latin, L-A-T-T-I-N. And he's working with inductors. These are not traps. They're inductors to extend the length of an element. And for about anywhere from 78 through 84 feet, depending upon the inductance of the loading coil, loading coils at the end, you could work 40 meters and 75 or 80 meters, depending upon how you trim it, with anywhere between 78 and 84 feet of length of a dipole. Does that help you?
Yes, George. Sounds really very interesting. Thank you. Very interesting.
F2CC.
All right. Now, the 120 microhenry loading coils that we be brought in toward the end are not going to be trapping at any point. They're going to be extending the entire antenna to a specific length of 125 to 130 feet long because of the inductance of the coils. They're not traps. So you will have an appreciable gain on 40 meters, and yet you can tune this to be on 75 in the 3/8 portion, 3/7 or 3/6 or 3/5 portion as you want, anywhere between 79 and 80 feet long. Now, this particular design was taken from Bill Latin by a few companies who never really gave him the appreciation of owning it. W4JRW, middle 1950s came up with this design. It absolutely works. So let me turn it over to Sam, KD2FIU.
I took notes. Thank you. I like the idea. I like the length, and it's a real possibility. And I'll do a little research based on that. Thank you very much, George.
Sam, I cobbled one out myself without buying a commercial product. I made one myself, and it came out to 79 and a half feet long, and I work all of 3.8. on the lower band, and all of 40 meters wherever I want. Half of the element is inside the third floor of my house. The other half of my element, I actually drilled a hole right under the apex of my roof and put it out as a sloper down to 16 feet. Excellent working antenna.
I'm going to study that aspect. That's the most promising thing I heard all night.
Yeah, 79, 80, 80-something feet, but that's it. You're not going past 82, 83 feet with it in length, and you'll get a very good appreciation of the, what we call the 80-75 meter band. Give me a call if you need some cobbling effects on that. KD2FIU. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, George. I mean, that's a very similar technology that my fan dipole I mentioned used. I think it was a five-band fan dipole. The biggest leg was the 40 meters, but it had inducting coils on either side and was loaded to operate on 80 meters as well. It's, again, narrow high Q, narrow bandwidth, but, you know, if you didn't mind playing around with a antenna tuner for the non-primary resident tuned frequency, it was a decent 80-meter antenna.
Well, I tuned mine for 40 and 75 about 7 or 8 years ago, and I don't work an antenna tuner. I have all of 40, and I have at least 100 kilohertz on 75, where I like to read you. KD2FIU, back to you, Roy.
Okay, yeah, if you want to keep it narrow, you don't need anything else, but if you want to do a little CW one day and a little phone the next day, you're going to need an antenna tuner.
Yes, and it works on the low band even for that. By the way, 40 meters, it's full wide band. Yeah, you'll need the tuner on the low band.
Yep. Yep, 80s where you're going to need the antenna tuner to get from one end to the other.
Good to hear from you, George. And thank you, Roy, for the time spent on this topic.
BUS2N.
Yes, Paul.
This is something I'm going to try in the spring. It's an antenna, and it comes out of DX Engineering. It's the ICOM AH710. It's a folded dipole, you know, and they claim from 1.9 all the way up to 30 hertz. The way if you're running an amp, you know, you're out of business. It'll go up to 150 watts, you know, for that. And they give you 100 feet of coax that goes with it. But I'm going to give that a shot because it only takes up 80 feet. That's all you need, 80 feet for this thing. But we'll see. It's not cheap, though. It's, you know, $400 range. Anyway, back to you, Brian.
Oh, okay. Well, I wish you good luck with it. Yeah, I mean, anything that has a brand name, you expect to pay a good 20-30% extra markup if it just had a no-name brand.
Okay. Yeah, I wish it was the springtime. I could have given you a good product review. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Brian, I think, are you out there? Did you want to say something?
Good evening, everybody. I'm just running a little late tonight, so I wanted to go ahead and tune in, say hello. So what's the topic tonight?
We never have a topic. A topic is based upon people's interests. We were talking about Sam's interest in putting up an 80-meter antenna on top of his brownstone. What was a good type of antenna for that purpose? But we never have a topic of the week. We let people bring their own topics to us.
Okay. I have an interesting question if nobody's up next.
We have two more people, so I'll put you on the list after George and Jose.
Okay. It's an antenna question, so it goes along with that 80-meter antenna. Okay. No problem. I'll stand by.
Okay. George, are you still out there with us?
KD2FIU, back to you. Kilo Echo 2,
okay.
Charlie Uniform Romeo. Roy, yeah, I'm still here. I have a comment and then a question. Comment on AI and then a question about satellite control and whatnot for the ICOM 9700.
Okay. Whatever order you want to put it.
Thank you, Roy. The first comment is AI. One of the things with AI, and it'll tell you everywhere you look and everywhere you use it, it does have hallucinations that everybody knows about, but it always has a warning that it has to be reviewed by somebody. So that's a technical, you know, way of copying out, but
AI is not designed currently to, in my opinion, to override the human experience. It's just to be a tool like everything else. That was my first comment. My second question, well, my question is, I'm just getting the Icon 9700, and I am looking to, I'm getting interested. I've never got into the satellites before, and this will be the first time. Does anybody have any suggestions, any way before I go? I really don't want to go out and purchase something. Is there something I could reasonably use? I have a small handheld Yagi I can use to try to track it. But any suggestions would be helpful. Back to you, Roy. Thank you. KE2, CUR, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I think that's just a legal loophole that their lawyers told them to put, although it's accurate. The problem is very few people read those things, and even people who read those things take it for granted that they could use the software differently than the manufacturer suggests. So there's way too many people who are falling in love with AI agents or seeking their wisdom for the economy or their psychiatric problems, all manner of things. So although it's a lawyer's attempt to get out of jail, and I understand it, you know, all these cases of AI-induced psychosis are still going to go through the legal system despite the disclaimers. But if anyone has any good suggestions of how to work satellite, I know there are people who can kind of do 14 things at once, and they have two HTs, and they have a Yagi that's kind of split between UHF and VHF at right angles, and they can maneuver them while they adjust the HT simultaneously. It dizzies me to kind of think of the things that they do. But if anyone has any good advice for George regarding, you know, stepping his big toe into satellite technology, please hit that push to talk.
This is M2AAM. WB2BXO.
Okay, N2AAM recognized, Frank recognized, N2AAM, you go first.
Okay, very good. Well, first of all, I'd have to ask a little more questions to be specific on certain things. I assume you're going to use your IC9700, and do you plan to mount some sort of a rotor for your antennas so you can remotely steer them, or do you want something that you're going to have to stand in your yard and rotate your Yagis by hand? I don't have enough information to tell you where to start, so that's why I'm asking some of these preliminary questions. Over.
No, thank you. Thank you for the question. Yeah. Right now, that's what I'm looking into. I'm looking into, should I go with the rotor? Should I? I don't even know where I want to go with it. I was looking for some advice just to see, A, is it worth it for me to do it? It's always a learning experience. I like that. And just, so right now, no, I don't have any of that. I'll probably manually have to adjust it or have one of my kids do it. But, yeah, that's my plan right now. And I'm just looking into it. I figured I'd ask the question, come on the net and just see what the people's opinion are, even if it's feasible to do.
Okay, well, first of all, since you're a newbie at the satellite work, I would suggest the easiest object in space that you can track is the International Space Station, the ISS, which downlinks on 437.8. And uplinks on the 145.990 with a PL of 67 hertz. Now, you can do it manually with a crossed Yagi, either crossed Yagi manually, and the passes are about maybe maximum about 13 or 14 minutes long. So you're going to have to rotate the antenna. And just, first of all, I would suggest you try and hear the signals. You won't be able to hear signals if you have a nice unobstructed path to the bird. First listen for it. And you can either use an arrow antenna, which is the VHF and UHF Yagi on one boom, or the elk antenna, which is a log periodic antenna, which you can use for 2 and 440. Let me drop it. And also, since you're going to be out in your yard when you're doing this, just to see as a test run, what kind of a phone do you have? What kind of a cell phone do you have? iPhone or Android? And there's a reason I'm asking that question.
I have an Android.
Okay, well, I don't know what's available in the Android side of the house. But you can probably get a program to track the ISS. Just look in the Google Play Store, and you have to try different programs. There is a great suite of software for the iPhone, in my opinion, called GoISS.watch, which is designed to track the ISS. There's also that's a free program. There's a paid program that these folks also make, but that's for all the satellites that are out there. If you just want the ISS program, if you have access to some sort of an iDevice, iPad, iPhone, etc., you get a program called GoISS Watch, which you can find in the App Store. Let me drop it for one more. Also, two websites I suggest you look at. N2YO.com, N2YankeeOscar.com gives you a whole bunch of information on the bird. Also, AMSAT.org, AMSAT.org. And you click on satellite information, you could actually track the birds, put in your grid square or your lat lon, and it will give you a custom track, a custom printout to where the ISS is in relation to your location. So hopefully that gave you a start, and I'm sure Frank BXO has some comments as well. This is N2AAM.
Okay, thanks a lot, David. Frank, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I apologize for the delay in picking it up. I hit the wrong button on the iPhone. In any case, WB2BXO here. I played with satellites using a dual-band full duplex handheld and a horsewhip antenna out on the boardwalk in Brighton Beach about 25 years ago and had a ball. And I actually made a couple of satellite contacts that way. Unfortunately, for reasons I'm not certain of, full duplex HTs are not widely available anymore, but you can probably find older ones on eHam or eBay. You don't want to walk around swinging two HTs with horsewhip antennas or one of these Arrow or similar dual-band, cross-polarized antennas, which are kind of awkward, but some people can do it. Anyway, I made a couple of satellite contacts that way using, as I said, a dual-band full-duplex HT. Regardless of what you're using, you really should have full duplex capability. You really want to hear your own signal coming back to you. Otherwise, if you can't hear yourself, then you're not hitting, then you're not reaching the satellite, and there's no point in calling. But in my opinion, that's essential. Even if you're using a base station. I also, believe it or not, made one satellite contact, one FM satellite contact, using 3 dB gain collinear and a mobile radio inside my apartment in Brighton Beach, in a Class 3 fireproof building on the third floor, with only a small clear view toward the ocean. I guess it's really Jamaica Bay over there near Coney Island. But you might want to look up, I'm sure it's in the QST archive, there's an article by Ray Seufer, I believe his name was. I think it's the Whiskey 2 Radio Sierra, now a silent P, who describes how to work satellites, FM satellites with a handheld. I followed the instructions in his article and had a heck of a lot of fun until I just got tired of running around the boardwalk at night as you probably know, Roy, running around the Brighton Beach boardwalk at night is not necessarily the safest thing to do. But anyway, you know, those are the tips I have. WB2BS.
Okay, very good, Frank. So far, how does the suggestions sound to you, George?
One, to end.
Well, first, I'd like to say thank you to David and Frank. Yeah, I appreciate all that input. I wrote everything down. I am going to do some more research. It gives me a jumping-off place where I can start. I was looking at some of the devices they have out there, and it can be very expensive before I even know exactly what I like to do with the that part of the hobby. So I thank you both, and I thank you, Roy, and back to the net. KE2CUR clear, back to the net.
You're welcome, George. Paul, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I thought he said he had Android. Anyway, if he does, the ISS detector app, you know, you get that for free. It'll give you all the passes, the visual passes that are involved. So there's other apps for daytime passes, but I'm always interested in actually seeing the ISS go over. But it's called the ISS detector, and very easy to use. And for instance, tomorrow night, 5:02 p.m. Looking at it now, brightness magnitude of -4.4. That's very bright. So at 5:02 to 5:08. So again, it's a 6-minute pass. So if I had a radio, which I don't, to try to contact them, you know, it would be fun to have it. Try to make a contact as they're going overhead. Anyway, but I find that to be the best there. Best for observation, and of course, you know, you got to hope that, you know, maybe somebody's on. You could always usually get into the Digipedias that they have on board, or through the actual repeater system that they use as well. So anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, sounds good. I mean, unfortunately, working satellites has a very wide range of expenses. You know, you could go bottom basement, you know, sales, you know, buy older equipment, because inevitably people kind of run out of steam and they sell their equipment. Or you could go for the nice new and shiny multi-axis rotators and the 9700. You know, the high end can give some people nosebleeds. So I wish you luck, George, and as you discover more about satellites, if you want to share it with us, we'd love to hear.
I absolutely will do, and thank you, Roy, and thank you for everybody's input. And I already downloaded that one app, so... It does look interesting, as he was saying. It's 5:02 tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow, 5:02, which is something to look forward to. So thank you guys, and have a great night.
Okay, very good, George. Be well. Jose, are you out there still? I hope so.
2 a.m. with additional.
Sure, David.
Okay, well, just one more item for George. If you want to get full duplex for satellite work, and that would definitely be an advantage because it helps when you hear the satellite downlink. You, on the used market, you might want to check eBay, et cetera, for the Kenwood THD-72. The Kenwood THD-72, or the Kenwood TH-72. That's a full duplex radio that, unfortunately, Kenwood does not make anymore. And also the Yaesu FT-530. The Yaesu FT-530. This radio is that are about 20, 25 years old or more. So if you could find them used and they do still work, you could probably get them for on the cheap. So you might want to try for those particular models, the Kenwood TH-72 and the Yaesu FT-530. This is N2AM, back to net.
Okay, very good, David. Thank you for the additional information. Anyone with any other comment before we move on?
WB2BXO.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, I got on satellite years ago with my duplex HT. And, you know, the kind of horse whip antennas, the longer rubber ducky antennas with absolutely no, I don't think I made any investment in satellite equipment to do it. I guess now if you don't want to carry two HTs, you may have to, somebody mentioned you may have to invest in a used dual band HT, but to try it out, you can do it with essentially no investment. I'm not sure. There may still be some Russian satellites that operate 50 meters up and 10 meters down, and. Or 2 meter. I know there were satellites at one point, but they're 2 meters up, 10 meters down. And I heard myself. I don't know if any of those are available anymore. You look at the AMSAT site. But that was kind of a hoot. I keyed my 2 meter base station radio plugged into an omnidirectional collinear on the roof of the apartment in Canarsie. And listened on my HF rig, and I could hear my own keying. I don't think I made any contacts that way, but I did hear myself. So there are some clever things you can do to get on satellites with absolutely no additional investment. WB2BXO.
Yeah, it's one of those aspects of the hobby that range from close to zero, you know, depending upon what kind of stuff you have in the basement or the garage. All the way up to God knows $5,000, you know, a 9700, a full axis a rotator with an azimuth control, with the electronics, with the software, all that stuff and such, you know, can get rather expensive. But, you know, like most things, you really probably should start with the cheap way and work your way up if you enjoy this aspect of the hobby.
No, thank you again to everybody and their feedback, and it definitely helps me in a direction. I'm going to look into it, and Roy, thank you very much, and again, have a good night, everybody.
You're welcome, George. On to the next. Jose, are you still out there? You didn't respond the last time I called, but we'll give you another try. KE2AJO, are you out there?
Yeah, I most certainly am. Thanks for the great night you guys got going on tonight. You guys are doing a great job. And good evening to everyone. I'm not going to hold you guys up any longer. I'm just listening in and supporting the night traffic.
Oh, okay, Jose. Have a nice evening. And if you have any questions or comments or topics down the road, you know where to find us.
Give us on. Thank you very much for the opportunity. K2AJO, back to you.
Okie doke. Brian, you got anything for us tonight?
I have this harebrained scheme. If I was to run a half-wave 80-meter antenna, and if I went, let's say, out a certain distance, and then, let's say, a foot to the right, and then back again, and then a foot to the right, and then forward again, sort of like a crisscross pattern, what would result?
Very confusing radiation pattern.
However, would electronically, would it work? I mean, it wouldn't be an 80-meter, you know, let's say even a long-wire antenna. I certainly understand that. But has anybody ever tried something like that? Is there a way to cheat the physics, or there's no way to cheat the physics?
As far as I'm aware, ultimately there's no way to cheat the physics. You pay a price if you screw around. I'm not quite sure. I can't really visualize it that well. Are you crossing over with the piece of wire, or is it always separate but, you know, kind of zigzagging through space?
Let's say 80-meter antenna. Half wave would be about what? About 130 feet?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say I went out, for example, just complete, you know, back and forth. Let's say I went out straight 25 feet, go to the right a little bit, then come back 25 feet, go right to the little bit, and then go up 25 feet, go right to the little bit, and then back again. Sort of like a weird sawtooth wave. Square wave.
Okay, if it was truly kind of like a square wave, where you're not kind of going back and forth, you know, next to it. You know, if you're going, you know, right, and then you're going left, and you're not going, you know, up or forward or backwards, then you got problems because you're coupling your wires. They're not going to be a half wavelength, so it's not going to be resonant unless you force it with some kind of discrete component or a antenna transformer. But theoretically, if you maintain it like a bunch of square waves, ultimately, it'll be resonant, it'll radiate, but because of its location in space, its radiation pattern will be distorted. You'll have odd lobes in some places and nulls in some places, and depending upon its relationship to who you're trying to reach, it might be very beneficial or it might be terrible.
Has anybody ever tried such a thing? I'm just curious.
I'm not sure if anyone tried a square wave configuration, but they have done a lot of zigzagging, and sometimes it's acceptable enough to use, and sometimes it's just awful, and they figure out some other option of getting a different type of antenna up. But there are people who zigzag their N-fed half waves, and since they use them, they must find them adequate.
Right, even if in a Z configuration, you know, where you're going out, coming back on a diagonal, going straight again, coming back on a diagonal, going straight again, etc. I mean, does that ever work, or is it just a poor cheat?
Again, it sort of work. It can sort of work. It depends upon your environment, topology, what kind of buildings, what they're made of, what location you're trying to transmit to, where the knolls, where the peaks are of the radiation pattern due to the interaction of the nonlinear nature of your NFED half-wave. It's it'll give you a signal. It might not be the signal that you want. Again, it may offer you a null in the direction that you want to talk to, which is going to mean it's going to make that particular transmission a terrible antenna. But again, people have zigzagged, because a lot of times the problem is the same that we mentioned earlier, that you just don't have enough land area. In the metropolitan area, it's very common to have a 20-foot by 100-foot plot of land. First 25 feet is the front and the sidewalk, and you can't really put up an antenna in the front of your house without getting a lot of problems from neighbors. So you got a 20 by 50 and maybe a 25 by 20 backyard, and so it's always going to be a compromise. So I mean, a lot of people zigzag because the wire's just too long. So you got to put it someplace, and sometimes you get away with it, and sometimes you don't. But usually, it's not a kind of binary yes or no. It's kind of it sort of works on a good day for the right frequencies, for the right direction. But is it the universal antenna of your dream? No, far from it.
All right. Here's why I ask. Because I'm going to be installing in the spring, and actually I have it here for months, and I just never had the chance to get to it every time I wanted to get to it. Right now I'm using a 72-foot random wire antenna. All right. With that being said, what I want to do is go out, let's say, straight, and then make a 90-degree curve on that antenna. Now, the way I modeled the antenna from, you know, with a couple of people that I knew, basically it came out to where it looked like an omnidirectional antenna because it was broadside, radiating, going from front, let's say from front to rear, it was radiating east-west, and then when it turned right for the duration or remainder of the antenna, then it was radiating north-south. And I'd just like to know if anybody has ever tried that before. Not quite a zigzag, just a 90-degree bend.
Okay, I mean, there are similar antennas called inverted L's, but unfortunately, although, you know, sometimes if you're very lucky, it'll follow that radiation pattern, but a lot of times the two portions will interact with each other and distort the overall radiation pattern. If anyone has any experience with the type of antenna that Brian is talking about, please feel free to hit that push to talk and say your piece.
Guess not.
Yeah, well, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
That's okay. I just want to. I'm going to do it anyway because I have no choice. I'm going to come out actually probably about 75 feet, and then I have to make a sharp right. Well, you know, this I have a solid post. Then I have to make a sharp right for the remainder of that. So I just wanted to know if anybody ever did an L-shaped radiation pattern with that before. The modeling shows that, you know, it'll turn into like more or less an omnidirectional antenna with the way the lobes work and everything like that. But I just wanted to know if anybody had tried it.
Yeah, I mean, the nature of amateur radio is I'm sure a lot of people have tried it. Have a lot of people who've tried it, you know, sit in front of their radio Sunday nights for the technical test? Probably not. So, you know, I wish you luck, and please come back and tell us what you discovered.
thank you. I appreciate the comments, and I will go ahead and do so in the spring when I put it up.
Okie doke. Sounds like a plan.
WB2BXO with a comment.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, two comments. I feel like I'm sounding like a know-it-all here. I'm really not. I really don't know all that much about any of this stuff and can just talk from some of my experience and some of the things I've picked up on TechNet over the years. But first of all, one of the biggest complaints I've heard over the years about dipoles is that they have a small amount of gain broadside and nulls at the end. You know, I know hams have gone through a great deal of trouble to put dipoles on rotors to overcome that, et cetera, which, and I know we've discussed this before, Roy, the amount of the dB difference between the broadside and the null on a dipole with no directors or reflectors, in other words, a dipole that you haven't made into a Yagi, difference between the broadside and the null is extremely small, only a dB or two, in other words, hardly noticeable, if I remember correctly. However, you can, if you find in the modeling that by bending the antenna, its pattern becomes omnidirectional, you're actually gaining an advantage with, I would assume, a slight dB penalty, since you can never, you know, since you have to lose some something somewhere. The only experience I've had with an antenna similar to that was years ago, my dad put up a shortened ZEP antenna, you know, which is essentially what they sometimes called an OCF, off-center fed dipole. Again, on our roof in Canarsie, and stretched out from the clothesline pole, which had nowhere near the space needed for 75 and 80 meters. It worked on 80 meters. I actually worked into Europe and into New Zealand on this thing. The problem is, you know, ZEP antenna, you know, a 1930s design. It was open wire fed and very unbalanced, and did a number on the landlord stereo, which caused me no end of problems. It got into the stereo speakers even with the stereo turned off. But from an antenna point of view, it did work, even though it was too short and bent all over the place to fit on the in the space available to us. WB2BX, so.
Yeah, I mean, some designs defy calculations and pessimism. They just work. As far as I'm aware, the free space gain on a center-fed dipole is only 2.15 decibels, and that's, again, in free space. When you settle it closer to Mother Earth, that gain probably goes down. So although, yeah, people do have problems sometimes, you know, the numbers don't suggest much of a difference. Frank, are you out there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure you were taking it back to me. I heard somebody key up while I'm transmitting there, speaking of full duplex. That's my thought. I mean, I see people go through a lot of trouble and expense to put up rotary dipoles, and I never really understood the point of that, since the amount of broadside gain for a one-element dipole, in other words, a dipole you haven't turned into a Yagi, is very minimal. And, the off-center fed antenna we had in Kennard see, yes, it did work. It also had, as I said, RF all over the place and caused no end to problems. So it didn't get all, it didn't get used all that much. But yeah, I think what we're talking, the kind of antenna we're talking about here, I think that Dick, may he rest in peace, would have said, yeah, you can bend the dipole any way you want and it'll work. So I would go for it. BB2BX, so back to Matt.
Yeah, I mean, the worst that can happen is it's not a great antenna. So you learn from your mistakes and you follow on. You know, I mean, how bad does an antenna have to be before it's a useless antenna? I guess ultimately if it's just a glorified dummy load.
Yeah, I would say the most important thing with an antenna is to compare it to something. Compare it to either another antenna you have or run some comparisons with a with another amateur to see how your with a similar antenna to see how it compares. Because sometimes you think an antenna is working wonderfully, and when you run a comparison, you find it's really not. I ran a comparison again, my old Canarsie station. I had a 20-meter dipole. My neighbor up the block, and I think I told this story before, had one of these mini products, mini beams, that he swore by and insisted got fantastic results. I did some I remember doing a comparison with him with a station in Belgium, and we had, and the results were almost identical. I think we had essentially the same radio as ATR4, and he had his mini beam, and I had my dipole, and to a couple of European stations, we had the same signal. His mini beam had absolutely, it was a lot more expensive, a lot harder to maintain, and had absolutely no gain over the dipole, though he thought it was working great. So go ahead.
Yeah, I've heard similar stories. I heard that story. You've told us before. The problem is the best way of comparing it is at the same time. The problem is most people don't have the means to do things, so they kind of go back into their memory. And amateur radio has so many variables in its nature that you can't really think of one antenna in one location during one season and compare it in your memory to another location and another time of the year and other variables because, you know, you can't select out for those. So, yeah, if you can possibly use the same radio in the same one block location for two different antennas, that's a great means for comparison. Again, but most people, unfortunately, don't have the ability to do that. The density of amateur radio operators is much too small for things like that usually. So, you know, you got to go back into your memory and, you know, our memory plays games on us. We think things were better than they were. So there's a lot of distortion when you go back into the Rolodex of your memory.
Well, I did comparisons, my ground-mounted vertical and my old dipole with a heat kit antenna switch, so I could switch antennas and do like, here's how I sound on number one and here's how I sound on number two. And that's how I discovered that my vertical really didn't radiate anything to speak of on 20 meters and above. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Yeah, I used to do the same thing when I had more than one antenna. I had my fan dipole, I had my vertical, and I had a bunch of antenna switches. I could hook them up so I could listen to one of them in my right ear and the other one in my left ear, or I could switch back and forth, or I could switch antenna amplifiers into and out of the circuit and such. And, you know, it's very useful, gives you a whole bunch of useful information of what kind of works and what you've been deceived that should work, but not quite in your case. So, yeah, it's very nice if you have the means to do that. You know, there are people, I'm told, with antenna farms, with a whole bunch of antennas coming into the shack with multiple switches to control them all, and that must be loads of fun.
Comment?
Yes, Brian?
Actually, I wanted to ask Frank a question. You mentioned that you lived in Canarsie?
Again, I apologize for the delay here. I've walked away from the phone. I lived in Canarsie for many years. I did live in Canarsie for many years. I was living there I did live in Canarsie for many years. Moved out completely around 2007. Well, I moved to Brighton in 1990, but my shack remained in Canarsie until about 2007. Go ahead.
This is Brian, KF2CC. I grew up in Canarsie for the most part near Seaview Park.
I know that area well, or at least I did. I was between East 95th and 96th on Avenue Emma's and Mary. So we're probably very distant in time. We lived you're very close to where I live. And you have an advantage then. If you're near Seaview Park, you will probably pick up some gain from the being near the ocean. And if you're able to operate portable or mobile from Canarsie Pier, which I assume is still accessible, you have a real gain from being near salt water. Go ahead.
I'm just curious because I moved out. I was out of Canarsie in 1994. But I was just curious, you know, because you mentioned Canarsie. So thank you very much, and I'll turn this back over to Roy.
Okie doke. Well, I don't know. Did we kind of burn this topic out or not? I don't know.
It's exhausted on my side.
Okay. Maybe we could ask if anyone has any new topics. We still have about 15 minutes if you want to use them. Use them or lose them, as the old saying goes. So if anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for discussion that they'd like to roll around for approximately the next 15 minutes, please hit that push to talk.
KT2VHD.
Yes, Jim. Long time no here. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had enjoyed yourself.
I did. Thank you very much. It's been a while. Out here on Long Island, halfway to Montauk on the right side, as I like to say. I had a thought, and I'm looking around on my phone. I can't find it. But on the brownstone antenna question, I had a thought to share.
Okay.
I can't find it right now, but there's this old article that talks about a clothesline antenna. Basically, I guess you call it a folded dipole that runs over two clothesline pulleys, and you usually utilize a feed point that actually you can move and change the band that the antenna works on. I've often thought in an urban environment where brownstone type of buildings and the potential to utilize that type of situation to not just have a tunable antenna, but have it disguised as a clothesline which wasn't part of the article's intent, but I was like, why shouldn't it look like a clothesline? And nobody would even bother with it. Have you ever heard of that type of arrangement?
Offhand, no. Sounds interesting. I think, unfortunately, culturally, clotheslines kind of faded out of existence.